All right. Well, I'm thankful that you guys are here tonight. I'm thankful also that last week Colby filled in. Last weekend was absolutely insane for me. And so there's just no telling what would have actually come out of my mouth last Sunday night if I'd had to actually talk. So Colby took over last night. And if you weren't here last week, you missed just a really good, not just a good sermon in the sense of prepared well and organized well. It was all those things. But for me, a very meaningful talk. I know I've been kind of chewing on what she talked about all week. In fact, to such a degree that I've had a hard time kind of moving past it. And I was torn because we should move on to the next passage, but I felt like there was kind of, I attached myself so much to what she talked about that I just kind of couldn't get it off my mind. And I ended up, you know, conversing with Colby about it and saying like, man, that was really good, but I'm still thinking about these things. And I feel like I want to kind of talk about it more, but I'm nervous about it because this happened to me a couple times in my life. At one point, I used to travel and speak to kind of make money. That's how I made money in seminary. And there were several times, at the time, you should know, I had hair down to about here. I didn't have a beard because I couldn't grow a beard yet, but I was an imitator of Christ by the pictures I saw, hair length wise. It was very, very biblical. And so I did like youth camps and all this kind of stuff as a camp speaker a lot. And then what would happen is I would do these youth camps during the summer, and then during the year, some of the youth groups that were at these youth camps would maybe call me, and they're from all over the place, and they'd say, hey, we're going to do a weekend for the kids. We want you to come and speak at it or something like that. And so I would travel all over the place and do this stuff. Definitely not glamorous, nothing too exciting. But there's a couple times, one time in particular when I went to a church in rural Kentucky, and I went, and the thing was I was supposed to speak four times to the youth over a couple days in the weekend, and then I was supposed to preach the Sunday morning service for everybody. And it's one of those things where pastors get a week off. There's someone that they're bringing in to pay anyways to speak for something, so you know you get a Sunday morning off. But apparently the youth minister didn't show my picture to the pastor in this church in rural Kentucky, and so on Saturday night he showed up after the talk, but when we were all still hanging out with the youth, and was kind of looking around for the guy that was going to be preaching the next morning. And when he found out it was me, it was just a visible look of discomfort slash anger slash righteous indignation. I mean, just obviously not happy with the situation. I mean, like, didn't say anything directly to me, but it was very palpable, right? And so I was like, oh, geez, this is going to be bad. So I got up, and it was one of those things where I got up in that it was a little Southern Baptist church, again, in rural Kentucky, and I got up in my scrawny guy with really long hair and ill-fitting suit off the rack that I had bought for such occasions. And I got up there, and it was like, I mean, I just felt like three-quarters of the room was just, you know, staring daggers through me. And I was like, all right, well, and I did one of those things where it was like, all right, just preach what you're supposed to preach, right? And so I got up, and I felt like I nailed it. And I know maybe you shouldn't talk about preaching like that, but it was one of those things where it felt like, man, I brought, this was good stuff, right? Now, in fairness, I'm traveling and speaking, which means I've got like 10 sermons I do over and over again, so you get pretty good at those 10 sermons, right? So, I mean, I was, by the end of it, I had everyone in the room that are with me, like, those who were staring daggers through me by the end, you know, were the grandma and grandpa that were shaking my hands in the back door. Like, it was one of those kind of successful moments. And what happened was I finished talking and I sat down and the pastor got up to kind of release everyone, and he said, well, you know, thank you, Mike, for sharing on, I don't remember what it was, let's just say, you know, God's love. And then he said, you know, the best way I've ever heard that talked about, and then he basically preached his own little 15 or 20 minute sermon, which is his way of saying, nice try, kid, but here's how you really do it, right? Now, inside, what I'm thinking is I didn't feel like the room was really with him as much as they were with me, so I felt, you know, on the evil non-Jesus side of me, felt good about that. But like it really bothered me and hurt my feelings, and because it was this sense of like, oh, I couldn't do it, so you had to get up and do it. And so I was talking to Colby this week, and I said, I feel like I want to do the next step in the story, but I don't want to get up there and pretend like you didn't do a good job, and I'm just coming in to, you know, well, here's how you really, and she said, no, I think, you know, we talked about kind of the themes, that kind of thing. She said, I think that's great. I love that. Please talk about that. So I give you that, all that to say that I want to continue talking about Thomas. And it's definitely not because Colby didn't do a good job of it. It's because I can't get Colby's talk out of my head. And so I attached to it so personally that it kind of took on a little bit of a testimonial feel for me. And I want to think about kind of the next step in that story. Now, if you were here last week, you'll remember that she did a great job kind of talking about the disciples who are locked in a room and those who are kind of locked away from the life that God has for them out in the world because of the fear they have and the anxiety they have and all the things that keep them stuck in that place. And Jesus' presence and how Jesus coming into that space opened that door for them to then get out. And if you weren't here last week, please go back and listen to the podcast. It really is. She did a terrific job on it. And I just so attached to that last week because there's this sense of this room full of people, all of whom are scared and anxious and fearful. And then the Jesus who comes into the room and is exposing his own wounds and his own scars. And there's something about that kind of the weakness and vulnerability of that story that I really attached to and I really kind of connected to. And I've always really been that way. I've never really gotten into stories, maybe when I was real, real little, but even the stories that kind of I was supposed to as a young guy, I didn't get into stories that were too above this earth kind of thing. I liked, you know, superheroes and comics. I wasn't real big into comics and that kind of stuff. I was more of a you know, G.I. Joe guy. But for obvious reasons, I'm not going to make that argument here, but, you know, way more macho than the other guy. But I was particularly, all my friends really liked Superman, and I never got into Superman. I just never really liked the comics much. I never really liked the movies that much because Superman was just, he was just too strong. Right? To me, it was like there's nothing interesting about it to me. Now, I know he had we had one weakness, right? And that was the green space rock, which is just a weird thing that have be your weakness. If you're coming up with the story of a Superman, oh, the green rock gets him. It seems weird to me. But it's like the one thing, right? But otherwise, you can't beat him. And so there's no real drama there to me because there's only so many ways you can work a green rock into a storyline time and time again before it just isn't interesting anymore. And when you're Superman and you can lift, there's like the movie they had not too long ago, and at the end he literally lifts an island out of the water and throws it into space. And you're like, I mean, he grunts a little bit, which I never understood. Like, either you can lift it or you can't lift an island. Why do you need to grunt? Like, it's, you know, like this is my new Max or something. But side point, but he literally listen, not the point of the story. He lifts an island and throws it into space. And at this point, to me, there's not much drama there, right? Like, I kind of got more into maybe the superheroes that were just guys that were either really smart or had some kind of gear that they got to use or something where they could actually, you know, if you hit them, they got hurt. And when there was a little more kind of drama to it. That's always kind of been the stories that I connect to. And if there's no real weakness in it, to me, I don't connect to it, which I'm sure says a lot about me. But it's also the reason why I connected that story, the reason I wouldn't connect to a Superman story, is also the reason why I struggled with church a lot. Now, I'm not trying to project my church experience on you, but this is kind of the basis of why I struggled so much with my faith and with church and with the image of God I was given as a kid, because we only talked about God in kind of Superman terms. Right, we only talked about we had all the omnis we talked about. That's what, all the time. I don't know if you grew up in the church that talked about all the omnis. Right, God is omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent, sovereign. He's all these things. Right, God is all this, all that, all this, all that, which is very true. And I'm not saying it's not, but it's kind of the only terms in which we talked about God. And then in my church, the pastor, you know, the pulpit was kind of up high that he preached from, and he wore a black robe that had these kind of velvet things on it and red crosses, and it was very, very kind of judgy. Not like he was judging me, but I mean like very kind of authoritarian. And he spoke in King James English, which I didn't even understand. And he talked about God in ways that just I had no clue what he was talking about. He obviously had access to knowledge that I did not have access to. And everyone at the church that I went to, I mean, your job when you got to church was to look good. And your job when you got to church was to tell everyone that things were good and everything was fine and to make sure you had your nice outfit on and to make sure everyone knew that everything in your life was grand and everything was going as planned. And it was just all good, right? And so I kind of grew up with this sense of God being so out there and detached and the pastor having some kind of special relationship with God that I didn't have access to and the other people in the church always having everything go pretty much right for them. And so that there's a certain amount of security that brings when you're real little, right? I mean, I'm glad for it in some ways. I didn't have any insecurity as a very small kid in church. I mean, it felt like a very secure place because everything was always good, right? Which is awesome when you're little. You know, you don't want to breed anxiety into a little kid. But there came a point as I got older And I realized maybe I didn't have everything quite as together as I'd like to have it. As I became more in touch with the world and in myself, that there came a time for me, and for me it was like high school. It was like, you know, I was about 16 to 18 years old particularly, when it made me begin to think that this whole God thing, this whole church thing was either one, just a lie, either everyone was just kind of lying, or it wasn't for me. Right? Because I didn't have access to the knowledge that this my preacher had. I didn't really understand this God that was out there so big and perfect and Superman-y and detached. And I certainly was not as good as everyone else that was around me, because all of them were perfect all the time, and I certainly was not. And so it became this point for me where it was either just a lie or it just wasn't for me. And so to borrow the image that Colby was using last week from the story of Thomas, by the time I was 18, I was locked in a room. Now, for me, it was partially there just because I felt spiritually inept. I felt like I didn't measure up spiritually because I was positive God was disappointed in me because I wasn't as good as the people around me. I didn't understand kind of these things that people talked about God and seemed to have access to. That was part of it. Whatever that thing was that was out there, that good and faithful people of God had access to, I didn't have access to. And then you combine that with everything that comes with just being a teenager, right? I mean, being, you know, the deeply insecure because I was, you know, the scrawny guy and I was late hitting puberty compared to everyone else. Everyone else, you know, was getting 5 o'clock shadows and muscles, and I still had a high voice, and, you know, girls weren't, you know, knocking down the walls to come and get me to date them or anything. I wasn't any good at sports. I would have gotten broken if I'd played football or something. My grades weren't great, and it didn't have the money that all the other kids in my school did. I mean, you know, all those kind of things that you use to measure life by, I didn't have. And then I also, you combine all that with just kind of the shame that comes with a lot of times being a teenager in a church that talks about God and morality in very specific ways. I mean, I don't know how pubescent boys make it out of church at all, right? I mean, because I was told as a kid, I was told exactly what our thoughts and minds should be like at all times for God to be happy with us. Of course, now I know later, I studied psychology, that kind of stuff, and what I know is when I was 16 to 18, I was essentially breaking God's covenant, God's heart, and sinning every 6 to 10 seconds. Right? Roughly. Maybe 15 seconds on a good day, right? And I don't know, I mean, and I don't know if you grew up in this situation or not, but I felt shame for that. I mean, I thought I was the filthiest human being alive, because I thought about girls nonstop. I know now that's just called puberty, right? That's just what happens. And it may have been happening to me a year or two later than other people, but it happens to everyone at some point, right? Which may have made it worse for me, because at that point I could really kind of, you know, I was trying to morally develop as well, and I was kind of having these conflicts. But, I mean, it was just, I had all these kind of things that really, that's why I connected so much to that image, that idea that that God had something for me out there, that there was life to be led and there was faith to be had, but I was locked in this space. Whatever was out there, I didn't have access to. So I connected to that image. And certainly, I still get locked up from time to time for some different reasons. They're very different now for me than they were when I was 16 to 18 years old. But I still get locked up, and I still get stuck. But so much has so drastically changed for me. And so I was connecting to that image, and I was thinking through that process of the disciples, and I connect so much to who they are and why they are feeling the way they are feeling and why they are trapped in this space. And then I began to think of, I no longer feel that way, so what moved me out of that room? And as I began to think about it this week, I was really kind of unpacking it, which is the evidence of a good sermon when you keep thinking about it a few days later. That's why you should always come when Colby's speaking. You'll get to experience that every once in a while. But I realized, really, it was the same thing for me as it was for these disciples in this story. Let's reread this the second part of the story again. Just John chapter 20, verses 24 through 31. It says, Thomas, the one called Didymus, or the twin, depending on your translation, one of the 12 wasn't with the disciples when Jesus came. The other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord," but he replied, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger in the wounds left by the nails and put my hand into his side, I won't believe." After 8 days, his disciples were again in a house, and Thomas was with them. Even though the doors were locked, Jesus entered and stood among them. He said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, put your finger here, look at my hands, put your hand into my side, no more disbelief, believe. Thomas responded to Jesus, my Lord and my God. Jesus replied, do you believe because you see me? Happy are those who don't see and yet believe. Then Jesus did many other miraculous signs in his disciples' presence, signs that aren't recorded in this scroll. But these things are written so that you will believe that Jesus is the Christ, God's Son, and that believing you will have life in his name. And so Colby got into all the great reasons why kind of the moniker of Doubting Thomas and the bad rap he's gotten was, you know, is not really well as well-earned as you might think. But the kind of the moment I'm really attached to in here is this idea that the way Jesus transitions, and this is a turning point. You never see the disciples trapped in a room again, right? And the way Jesus transitions, Thomas specifically, but the disciples out, is an exposure of his own wounds. The scars of Christ changed everything. Jesus responds to lingering fears by showing his own scars, the evidence that others would use to make a case against him being God, right? He was crucified, is the very evidence that he uses to demonstrate what he's all about. It is the is what he uses to help heal the others, his own struggles, his own wounds, his own scars. His scars set them free. And this is the most backwards and, to me, beautiful and compelling thing about Jesus and why I still am interested in this Jesus story and in this person of Jesus. That somehow he heals, not through conquering all, not by being Superman, but God becomes flesh and blood, dwells among us, becomes obedient even unto death on the cross, that every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess. We are healed through his wounds, through his scars, the very thing that should maybe disqualify him from being seen as God. Now, we talked about being healed by God's wounds in my church growing up, but we only talked about it in a very specific way. And we talked about it in what they would call in terms of atonement, right? This is a $10 theological term for you. So we used to always say atonement means how you get at one with God, right? At one minute. Take that home. Impress your friends. But and throughout Scripture, there's all kinds of different metaphors used for atonement, right? There's metaphors of ransom. There's metaphors of what they call Christus Victor, which is like this big, you know, think Revelation, like big global kind of or intergalactic spiritual battle kind of terms going on. There's the what they call penal substitutionary, which is this idea that I've committed a long list of crimes and I should go to prison for it, but Jesus steps in and takes my penalty, right? So there's this kind of courtroom kind of metaphor. And then there's this metaphor of sacrifice, this metaphor that would have fit very well for the life, daily life and times of the Jewish followers of Jesus who would go to the temple and make sacrifices to atone for their sins to God. And this idea is, and this metaphor that is very scriptural, by the way, I'm not saying it's not at all, this idea that, you know, instead of taking just a lamb and getting this one sin forgiven, I take the lamb and that blood covers all my sins. And, you know, and there's this really kind of beautiful metaphor that's in scripture. But we tended to take that one metaphor and just hold on to it with a death grip and ignore everything else and just wring every bit of life out of it we could and just never let go. And so we talked about that all the time. And it's a great metaphor. It's a beautiful image, but it is a metaphor, right? It doesn't, like any metaphor, it breaks down eventually. Like if you wear it out too much, it doesn't do justice to the very thing it's supposed to be pointing you towards. If you run too far with this image, with this biblical metaphor, we end up getting some weird things happening. God ends up becoming a little bit bloodthirsty, right? Kind of like throwing the virgin into the volcano to make the gods happy. Like, you know, God needs blood. Right, and you get this kind of thing where if you run with it too far, all of a sudden there's some weird kind of stuff going on there, and it's also very transactional. Like, you know, God's mad at me, so then we pay it off with this, and now we're good with God, which doesn't really, if we're in relationship with God, that doesn't really work in relation. Like, if Sarah and I have a real big fight, I don't repair the relationship by cutting off my pinky and giving it to her, right? I mean, that's not how relationships work. It's not that transactional. If your relationship is that transactional, there's something wrong with the relationship, right? That's not love. That's something else. And so the metaphor can break down eventually. But so we talked about this idea of being healed by God's wounds, but it was only in this kind of transactional, we kind of ran with it too far. And like, God needs blood, Jesus provided the blood, and so now you're good. And that was kind of it. But for today's conversation, the problem with the way we talked about it, even though we talked about being healed by God's wounds, by God's scars, God still remained so kind of distant and invulnerable in that situation. It just doesn't resemble the picture of Jesus that you see, and even in this story, right? A God with wounds, a God with scars. So all that to say, it's a great metaphor, but it's certainly not the entire mystery, and it never really turned the lights on for me. It didn't connect to me. But Christ demonstrates an image of God here that is, yes, pure, yes, holy, but also weak and scarred and wounded. And this is such a compelling image of our God and of God's story. And for me, that's where healing was found. Like no other story. I don't think you can find another even religious system that talks about God in this way. Because I think there's healing in this idea. Have you ever felt healing begin in yourself when you were exposed to someone else's wounds or scars? It's happened to me time and time again in my life. That's the story of the disciples here. That's what changed everything, was Christ's humility and scars. This humble exposure of wounds to those who felt so wounded and weak themselves. That's how Christ moves them from A to B, right? Christ could have floated into the room and shown up as a bright, brilliant light and a loud voice from heaven and something very impressive and very Superman-y, right? But no, Christ walks into the room in the same dirt they walked in, breathes the same air they do, eats the same food they're eating, and blesses them face to face while showing them his wounds and his scars. I started feeling compelled to leave the room for me the very first time I really heard, and maybe someone had said it to me before and I just didn't hear it, the very first time I really heard about God's vulnerability, about Jesus' humility. The first time I heard someone preach, and I remember the sermon, the very first time I heard someone preach about Jesus as neglected and hurt and wounded. The very first time I heard Christ talked about as one who struggled and was tempted and wept and bled, to use biblical language, a high priest who was able to sympathize with my weaknesses. A God who really felt what I felt. That Christ, while being in every way pure, was fully, disturbingly, and disarmingly human, which we never talked about in my church growing up. Jesus was incarnate, which is to say that Jesus was a whole lot like me, while being exactly like God. It's a deep, profound mystery. In turn, Jesus, the dusty, weepy, struggling prophet of the desert, was every bit as accessible to me as it was to my pastor in the robes and the King James English. The first time I really had that vision of Jesus kind of preached to me that sermon, it began to unlock some doors for me. But I didn't just hear it in sermons. The chief way I experienced it was through people. It was about this same time that I found my first friends that were really honest with me, who were also people of faith. I had my friends that were people of faith, and I had my friends that were honest. I hadn't had both yet. Friends who told me about their own struggles, their own darkness, their own isolation, who showed me their scars, who told me the stories that no one wants to tell each other, and I to them. Friends who let me gaze into their own wounded humanity and find some company. And I don't just mean sitting around and having pity parties, but I mean relationships that enabled me to actually try and actively become the person I felt called to be while being honest about what was broken in me. Places where I had the freedom to be honest, where I could talk about those things that locked me up, those things that isolated me. And suddenly those things that everyone in this kind of group of friends I had that used to keep us separated from everyone, that used to keep us locked in a room, began to be the very things that bonded us together and bound us together and drew us closer to the God we wanted to be closer to. I was very literally finding healing in other scars and vice versa. I'd never seen anything like that growing up. I didn't know you could do that. Never heard it preached, never experienced it in friendships. And I don't know about you, but this is, pretty literally the only place in this world I find actual healing. I've never felt any kind of real healing or connection from anyone that was on a mountaintop. This hasn't happened for me. Maybe you have. Maybe you've just heard like a preacher who seems very untouchable to you that just conveyed something in such a way that it just changed your life. That's just never happened for me. It always kind of happened in the dirt. And I suspect that's by design. I suspect that's why God took on flesh and blood and dwelt among us. I suspect that's what we're supposed to be as the body of Christ. Because it's still happening for me today. It wasn't just in those first set of friendships. Just in the last couple weeks with some of you, I've had some very heavy and honest conversations about loss and about grieving and about all the difficulties that come with that. And I've found healing in your scars. And hopefully you have in mine as well. Maybe this is our call. And that's what I want to end with tonight, because that's what I just was so compelled by this story. I just want to end on this note, that maybe that is the way it's supposed to work. Maybe in Christ's upside down, backwards kingdom, in this weird faith that we have, we are supposed to be humbled, we are supposed to be scarred, we are supposed to be honest about our wounds as we walk through this world. Maybe that's how healing happens. Maybe we're to be walking into this world authentically offering healing to the others by being honest about our own scars and our own wounds. Maybe it's time to stop pretending. Maybe it's time to stop portraying strength and confidence and invulnerability and answers that we don't have. Maybe it's time to stop trying to win all the arguments. And maybe we should just simply bear witness to what we know about our world, our own lives, and our Creator, and honest about our own scars and struggles. And what if we showed our scars instead of hiding them? It's the basis of every good recovery program. It's the basis of every good church, as far as I'm concerned. Not attempting or pretending to be anything we are not. Because I believe this is the way. This is the way we find courage to open the doors and walk out of the rooms that we've locked ourselves into. This is how Christ compelled his disciples to leave, and I think this is how we compel each other. Because what if we as a people of God were known as wounded healers and not as self-righteous religious zealots? What if we were known as people who had questions and not just answers? What if we were known as people who struggled and not just people that float above this earth somehow? What if those things that you are most scared of, most embarrassed of, most ashamed about are actually the very wounds and very scars God wants to use to draw others closer? What if our scars are our witness? What if they are actually the evidence that will help bind up the wounds of those around us? So as we think about the story, as we think about Thomas, as we think about how Jesus handled this situation, not by going in and saying, "Hey, I'm God. Who are you to say you don't believe? You guys are locked up in this room, you bunch of wusses. I just hung on a cross. Get after it. Pick yourself up by the bootstraps and do it," right? That seems like a good moment for him to have one of those kind of speeches. And instead, he goes in and with the same vulnerability and weakness that he has walked through his entire life and just demonstrates his own scars and wounds. What if we were like Jesus? Let's pray. Thank you so much for being here tonight. Again, if you're with us for the first time, be sure to get us your email address, put on that plastic box by the back door, and we'll get you on the email list. If you have any gifts for the ministries of this community, you can put them in there as well. If you want to be a part of that kind of monthly auto donation thing, what's the word I'm looking for?
Auto draft,
that word. That's why we had Jonathan come up and talk to me. Talk to Caroline about that. She can get you signed up for that. But thank you so much for being here. Don't forget, Tuesday night, roller skating. Please come out to that. If for some reason finances are the only thing keeping you from coming to that, come anyways. We'll make sure you get in. It's more important for us that you're there to hang out with us. Live at 5 on Friday night. T-shirts if you want one of those. And then don't forget to sign up for small groups out there if you haven't already and you want to be a part of one. But thank you so much for being here tonight. Thank you for giving your time to this place and this community. And as we leave this place, May we be moved by a God who took on flesh and blood, was wounded and bled and wept with us. And may we be the walking wounded healers in this world. Peace be with you. Have a great week.